Good morning, everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our program is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the Age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers. They work in many fields and can teach us the art of living, how to live in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace for us all.
Good morning, everyone. Today we have a message from a Master of Wisdom headed The Justice of the Law. This message was given telepathically through Benjamin Krem in March 2015. The telepathic process is not the same as mediumship, where the being is taken over by another. It is an overshadowing of process, where there is a rapport set up and the receiver is inspired mentally. The receiver uses his own mental equipment. We have a book review as well of The Book of Joy by the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu, and an article about a universal basic income, followed by a short message from the Master about the role of Maitreya, the world teacher.
So here is the article titled The Justice of the Law by the Master. Men live in a changing world and must accept it as the norm. For some, these changes will seem threatening and unwelcome, while for others, especially the young, they will be welcomed with open arms. Be assured that they are for the best, whatever your stance, for they reflect the needs of the time and are inevitable and just. Men should realize that they themselves are creating the conditions whereby these changes impact their lives. When this realism bears fruit, a smoother transition into the new time will become the norm. Our advice to men is this: hold not to blaming unseen forces, but realize your own part in creating the transformations of our time. Be assured that out of these transformations will come an ecstatic joy.
And now we have a book by his, it's called The Book of Joy, Lasting Happiness in a Changing World. And this is by His Holiness the Dalai Lama and Archbishop Desmond Tutu with Douglas Abrams. It is actually a review by Mark Gregory. At this decisive moment for humanity and the planet, with the potential for a leap of consciousness into wondrous new beginnings or the stark possibility of cataclysmic disaster, should we not change course? Faith, hope, and constructive action are especially crucial for humanity's well-being. Yet at this time, many confront the challenge of finding the inner peace and equilibrium to sustain that faith and hope. In response to this universal quandary, two of the world's preeminent and best-loved spiritual leaders, His Holiness the Dalai Lama and Archbishop Desmond Tutu, have made use of a birthday celebration to address the most daunting spiritual problems besetting humanity. A little background is needed. In 2011, Archbishop Tutu sought to invite his good friend the Dalai Lama to the celebration commemorating his 80th birthday. The government of South Africa, bowing to political pressure from the Chinese government and over the strong objection of the Archbishop, denied the Dalai Lama permission to enter the country. So, in 2015, for the Dalai Lama's 80th birthday, arrangements were made for the Archbishop to attend the week-long celebrations at His Holiness Residence in Exile in Dharamsala, India. They were joined there by Douglas Abrams, author and assistant to the Archbishop, and Thupten Jinpa, a Buddhist scholar, and the Dalai Lama's principal translator for over 30 years. Although a rare opportunity for two old friends to spend some time in each other's company, the week-long dialogue avowedly had a greater purpose: to address the question of how to develop and sustain lasting joy in a troubled, often harrowing world.
The sense of authenticity that these two bring to such issues comes, as many may know, from both having been severely tested in the fires of calamitous world events. Having become the leader of 6 million Tibetans at the age of 15, and then attempting for 9 years to negotiate with the Chinese leadership occupying his country, the Dalai Lama left Tibet in 1959 at the age of 24 to prevent an uprising that would have resulted in a brutal massacre of his people. His path to safety in exile was fraught with difficulty and danger, requiring a perilous 3-week trek through the Himalayas, confronting sandstorms and snowstorms as they summited 19,000-foot mountain peaks. For his part, Desmond Tutu became the face of the anti-apartheid struggle when so many of its leaders, notably Nelson Mandela, were imprisoned by the government of South Africa. Shielded by his position as a high-ranking cleric and by the Nobel Peace Prize he won in 1984, the Archbishop fervently campaigned through great difficulty for the end of oppression of blacks and other people of colour in his country. During that bloody struggle, he buried countless men, women and children and tirelessly preached peace and forgiveness at their funerals. He was later asked by President Nelson Mandela to create the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in an effort to confront the horrors of apartheid and guide the country into a future free of revenge and retribution. Each of these men has surmounted enormous challenges, both personally and by having made the burdens of entire nations their own. And yet they have not lost touch with the wellspring of their inner joy, nor have they lost touch with their essential humanity. The Archbishop has never claimed sainthood, and the Dalai Lama considers himself a simple monk. Much of what they are able to share with us is reflected in this statement.
At no point does either man say that painful situations and negative states of mind can be avoided. Over and again, it is stressed that these conditions are a part of life, and it is how we view them and respond to them that we determine what our lives will be. Both see trials and difficulties as opportunities for growth and spiritual development. The question then becomes one of perspective. While the plight of the Tibetan people is never far from his consciousness, the Dalai Lama says, "When I look around the world, there are a lot of problems, even within the People's Republic of China. And then outside China, there are many more problems and more suffering." By being conscious of the trials of others, we will reduce the worrying and our own suffering. Douglas Abrams then comments that this was not a denial of pain and suffering, but a shift in perspective from oneself towards others, from anguish to compassion. This shift in perspective is echoed by the Archbishop as he shares the African concept of Ubuntu, which he illustrates in this way. "When I have a small piece of bread, it is for my benefit that I share it with you, because, after all, none of us came into this world on our own." The idea is to expand one's personal point of view outwards until it begins to take in the struggles of all humanity. As we do, we may seek to do something to alleviate not only our own suffering, but that of others. Both leaders, however, address the psychological conditioning that makes that expansion problematic for some.
Dalai Lama says, "So much unhappiness originates in our own mind and heart and how we react to the events in our life. Especially today, there is not much focus on inner values and education. Then, instead of inner values, we become self-centered, always thinking, I. The Archbishop and the Dalai Lama agree that so much of our stress is dependent on seeing ourselves as separate from others, which perhaps returns to the loss of our sense of communal connection of Ubuntu. Here, they are clearly referring to a world culture that values competition and acquisition over unity and brotherhood, a culture that encourages the individual to focus on his or her own problems and desires, rather than cultivate a broader perspective. What the Archbishop and the Dalai Lama were saying is that the way we heal our own pain is actually by turning to the pain of others.
As the considered perspectives based on a lifetime of experience of two of the world's great altruists, it is not surprising that their viewpoints are amply supported by some of the latest scientific research on human behavior. For example, the neuroimaging research of San Francisco-based neuroscientist Richard Davidson has pointed to a unified theory of the happy brain. Davidson has found that there are four independent brain circuits that influence our lasting well-being. They are our ability to maintain positive states, our ability to recover from negative states, our ability to focus and avoid mind wandering, and our ability to be generous. In other words, something in us rejoices when we do good or see good being done by others. There is strong and compelling research that we come factory equipped for cooperation, compassion, and generosity.
In keeping with their own experience and with the latest research, the two offer up eight pillars of joy that can be counted upon when applied to help sustain the positive outlook to which most aspire. Four are qualities of the mind: perspective, humility, humor, and acceptance. The other four are qualities of the heart: forgiveness, gratitude, compassion, and generosity. The two agree on almost every point except one, where they approach the same question from different angles. Archbishop Tutu states, "I think we've got to accept ourselves as we are, that we should not berate ourselves for our negative thoughts and emotions. They are only made more intense by the glue of guilt and shame when we think we should not have them." The Dalai Lama concurs, but goes on to say that we can, by training the mind through self-inquiry, learn to avoid the destructive emotions and to develop the positive ones. One must develop the mind over time and cultivate mental immunity. And indeed, a joy that runs much deeper than mere happiness or contentment is a state of being the two demonstrate to us by unswerving example. The ultimate goal, as the Archbishop puts it, is to become a reservoir of joy, an oasis of peace, a pool of serenity that can ripple out to all those around you. One of the qualities that makes this book a delight to read is the profound and palpable brotherly love these two men have for each other. In between their more serious reflections can be seen numerous moments of gently playful teasing and banter in which they joyfully engage, and the pleasure they take in each other's company. The symbolic significance, however, of the meeting of these two cannot be overstated. Because of the status each holds in the world, and because of the spiritual traditions they embody, this book is, as much as anything, a representation of unity between East and West, and an exhortation by example to relinquish our more parochial attachments to one spiritual tradition or another, and to see the entire human family as one. That oneness is at the heart of all their contemplations, and there is no doubt that the two, each in his own way and within his own spiritual tradition, echo the precepts of the ageless wisdom teachings as set forth by Maitreya and the Masters of Wisdom, that of our essential unity regardless of race, nationality, or spiritual inclination, and that our concerns need to embrace not only those in our immediate surroundings, but those of humanity as a whole. As exemplars of these principles made manifest, the Archbishop and the Dalai Lama have served the world exceedingly well. So again, that's a review of a book called The Book of Joy, Lasting Happiness in a Changing World, by His Holiness the Dalai Lama and Archbishop Desmond Tutu with Douglas Abrams, published in 2016 by Avery Publications.
And now I'm going to read you an article entitled A Basic Income for All. This is by Gar Alperovitz, who has had a distinguished career as a historian, political economist, activist, writer, and government official. Some of his notable works are Unjust Deserts, How the Rich Are Taking Over Common Inheritance in 2008, Making a Place for Community, Local Democracy in a Global Era, 2003. In a recent article, Technological Inheritance and the Case for a Basic Income, Alperovitz sets out a new historical perspective, which, if accepted, would make the implementation of basic income for all simply a matter of common sense. He cites several, possibly surprising, other advocates who also put forward the idea of a basic income in one form or another. Individuals ranging from conservative economists like the late Nobel Prize winner Milton Friedman to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., modern feminists concerned with care work have emphasized versions of it, as have black activists facing an economy that simply does not provide jobs for millions of people. The key to the argument, says Alperovitz, is the simple reality that most of what we all receive as income far, far exceeds what anyone can claim as the result of the work they actually do in the here and now. Once this fully documented reality is understood, the moral case for a basic income for all becomes very different from conventional understandings. The starting point is recognition that most income is, in fact, a gift of the past. His main thesis is that all income is inherited and stems from the past. He refers to it as the central moral point. A person born at the end of the current century will have done absolutely nothing to enable or deserve this enormous gain. All of it will come to that person as a gift from the past, mainly from the accumulation of technological and scientific knowledge she receives just by being born. What a person receives today does not come as a result of her individual contribution. Thus, self-evidently, a person working today produces many times the economic output for a similar number of hours worked than someone working with the technology of the 1800s. The difference between what a person could produce 100 or 200 years ago is primarily due to technological change, the gains of which come to all of us as a free inheritance, most of which is currently captured by upper income groups.
If we accept the argument that some portion of income comes from the past, from this huge overhang of technological inheritance, as the late Stanford University economic historian Nathan Rosenberg termed it, then a basic share should be due to each of us simply because we are members of the ongoing human community. And clearly, if the overwhelming source of modern wealth is a collective and common inheritance of knowledge, the incredibly inequitable distribution of that wealth in modern society is even more abhorrent and illogical. Alperovitz quotes from Martin Luther King Jr.'s final book, Where Do We Go From Here, Chaos or Community? I am now convinced that the simplest approach will prove to be the most effective. The solution to poverty is to abolish it directly by a now widely discussed measure, the guaranteed income. Gar Alperovitz continues, a reasonable case could be made to affirm some moral obligation to contribute something back to society in exchange for the gift from the past. On the other hand, a generous society might just as well say that as a matter of principle, no one should go hungry or live a life of fear and insecurity, no matter what. If so, a modest part of the gift of the past would simply be allocated in support of a basic income as a simple matter of community.
Now, a quote from Maitreya. The love of my heart draws me to you. We are together, therefore, you and I, and to serve. Knowing this, grasp the opportunity to serve the world in a unique fashion, my friends, and travel far on the path. Why sit and wait for my appearance when the world needs your weight? I ask you then to work with me, to prepare my way before men, and to induce somewhat the climate of hope in which readily my face may be seen. Count yourselves as fortunate, my brothers, to be presented with such a choice. The day is coming when you will thank your Maker for this opportunity. Thank you very much for listening today. We hope you've enjoyed the program, and should you wish to contact us, you can write to us at Share International New Zealand, PO Box 34491, Birkenhead, or look at our website, share-international.org. Thank you very much.